Hello, fellow foodies. This is Dr. Cassandra Quave, and you're listening to Foodie Pharmacology, the science podcast for the food curious. This episode has a slightly different setup from what you may be used to when listening to Foodie Pharmacology. This interview is part of a series that I did in collaboration with the International Treaty on Plant Genetic Resources for Food and Agriculture. In this series, I talk to different experts about the trends they observe in plants that are important to our agriculture, diets, and health. I hope you enjoy.
One is the size. Fonio is tiny. It's this, like the size of sand, but it's also millet, and it's gluten-free. So if you saw it, you can harvest within 8 to 12 weeks. And then also, it thrives in drought areas. Now, when it comes to taste, it's almost like couscous, but not really. It's a bit earthy. Honestly, I call it the iconic green. It's very special.
Hello, this is Dr. Cassandra Quave presenting Treaty Talks, a podcast by the International Treaty on Plant Genetic Resources for Food and Agriculture. In this series, I'm discussing trends with experts in crop production, research, and gastronomy. This series reflects on Plants That Feed the World, a study and database presenting figures on plants that are important to humans' diet, health, and livelihoods on a global scale. In this episode, I'm talking to world-class Sierra Leonean chef Benta about the importance of plant diversity in her cooking, and we're going to find out more about her passion for ancient grains.
My name is Benta. I'm from Sierra Leone, based in Accra, Ghana. I'm a chef, I'm a food systems advocate, and I also consider myself a cultural ambassador. I own a nomadic restaurant called Dine on a Mat, and also I founded a foundation called Fulani Kitchen Foundation. And our main goal is to create my brand niches inspired by Fulani communities across Africa, highlight underutilized ingredients, promote food and culture, and also we work with women who are growing ancient grains in the north of Ghana. So in a nutshell, that's what I do.
That's amazing. So can you tell us a bit about why is plant diversity so important to what you do?
It's very important because I think our foods, our grains, they are so sustainable. And then the pace at which food is moving, I think we need an reset. So a lot of these ingredients are underutilized. I think it's very important we highlight them because some of these crops are becoming orphan crops because they've not been tapped into enough. And I think for us to, we keep talking about climate change, food security, the only way we can solve this issue is to have varieties, to tap into all the varieties of foods we have.
Are there any trends that you've noted regarding, for example, access to ingredients that have started to emerge? Is it difficult to access some of these wild foods or even some of these specialty varieties?
It is difficult. And the reason why I believe so is because one is accessibility. Some of these people are growing these grains in these rural communities and they don't have access to bring it in time. And then also the pace at which the world is moving is too fast. People don't have time anymore to cook a whole meal. Everybody's doing grab and go. The world is moving too fast. So we are slowly moving away from whole foods to fast food. And I think that's alarming. We need to go back and reset our food system. So it's very, as a chef, I feel responsible. That's why I tell stories a lot about grains. I encourage people to use it more. And the earlier we do that, the better.
That's great. On this topic of fast food, I guess one question I have is, you know, can traditional foods also be a faster food? Are there ways that people can learn to have a more healthful meal using these traditional ingredients?
Yes, I believe they could be fast food, but they could be healthy fast foods. Because it's their whole, it's direct contact. You know where your food is coming from. You know how it's been sourced than food that is canned or food that has traveled miles away to come to you. So it's not necessarily grabbing something quickly. It's really about where you got your food from and then the process of it. I feel like we can still have great food in a more organized way without having to compromise on the benefits and quality. That's why seasonal foods are very important also. I think seasonality, pay attention to what's in season, eat that, and then move to the next and explore more varieties.
That's great. Do you think that chefs can play a role in spreading the word or perhaps even teaching people how to access and how to prepare these types of foods?
Absolutely. I feel like chefs, we need to do that more because we have a platform. We connect with people easily. This is our space, you know. So any opportunity you get to host a guest on a table or a mat is a space for you to educate someone. And also people look up to us a lot when it comes to being more creative with ingredients. So I think we can play a big role in this movement.
That's great. I'm curious about some of these traditional grains that you mentioned. So how do you source these grains? Where are they being grown? Are these being produced in kind of a large monoculture, or are these more of small stakeholder farmer crops?
Mostly the ancient grains are smallholder farmers. And because of also some of these grains are very tedious to process because they are still done the traditional ways. So a lot of farmers are unable to scale because it takes like months, sometimes weeks to process it for you to get a good final product. So usually they just grow what they can eat. And also sometimes they are not paid fairly. So they are not motivated to grow more. So I think if we can, for me as a chef, I believe if we can bring farmers along our journey and connect with them and encourage them the right way, give them the right tools to grow this food, process things like fonio, which I'm a big advocate for. Fonio is an ancient grain. It's also part of the millet family. It's been around for over 7,000 years. It's gluten-free. It's very healthy. When you think about the planet, it's so easy to grow. When you sow it, you can harvest within 8 to 12 weeks. So just imagine how powerful that is. I think there's so much the world needs to tap into when it comes to ancient grain. So it's all about collaborating with farmers, collaborating with diners, sharing recipes and exploring varieties of food. I think it goes a long way.
Let's talk a little bit more about millet. Can you perhaps distinguish or describe what millet is? Many listeners are familiar with wheat and other kind of large-scale production grains, but perhaps have never tasted millet or have never seen it. Can you describe what is millet? How does it taste? And what types of dishes can you prepare millet in?
It's a very versatile grain. Millet is a whole grain. It's very high in fiber. It's something that resembles quinoa. And I think it's the next thing. Because quinoa has taken off. Now we have fonio, we have millet. And it's something you can create in so many ways. Like in West Africa, I've noticed that it's mostly used in the rural areas because they don't have much access to rice that comes from places like China or just Asia in general. So they play around with it a lot, like breakfast, which they do something like porridges. There are ways they also mix it sometimes with local rice in these rural areas, which also adds fiber to the rice. For dinner, they grind it up and make things like cake. So there are so many ways you can actually use that grain. But it's very nutritious. It's very high in fiber. It's very easy to grow. It's good for the planet. When you're growing it, you don't need to plow the land too much. It doesn't require much water to grow. So if you think of, I couldn't think of any better sustainable grain, honestly.
Here's another question. When you cook millet, I mean, this is something you're obviously very passionate about. When you cook millet, does that bring up any memories of childhood memories of dishes, or what types of memories or flavors kind of come to mind when you're preparing a millet dish?
It's a good one. For me, My love, actually, for millet and fonio, it all started from a personal experience. I experienced civil war, a brutal civil war, when I was in my early teens. And I come from a very, very large family. I'm talking over 1,000 first cousins. No joke. So we had to leave Sierra Leone, and we went to my ancestral home, where my parents are born. And we moved into this very, very small village that could only accommodate like 100 to 200 people. And we were way over that. So rice couldn't sustain us. All the other ingredients available couldn't sustain us. Like a 550 kg of rice was consumed in a day or two. So my grandmother had to come up with more creative and sustainable ways to feed us during that time. And we were there for like 2 years. So what she started doing, and you know, in the villages, they have access to land. So, and we are a lot. So there was also manpower. So they would line everybody up in the morning. We go to the farm and we started growing fonio, millet, sorghum, all types of millet. And that's how we sustained ourselves for that 2 years. And I vividly remember being on that farm sometimes in the morning. We'll do breakfast. Like, we used to eat millet every single day, like 3-4 times a day. That's the only thing we were feeding on. But we had to also get creative, because if not, then it's boring. So we created so many things. Everything was done from scratch. And I honestly believe that the chef I am today was shaped by that experience. So some memories are like us lighting fire at night and just frying, you know, the way where they would grind the millet, mix it up with ripened bananas, like the one that looks like it's going to go bad. And they will add things like nutmeg, sugar, a little, and they will deep fry it in palm oil or just oil. And that was good. And they will tell stories around the fireplace. So I still hold those memories very dear to my heart. And once the campaign started about millet and fonio sustainability, I wanted to be part of that conversation because I've had first-hand experience.
What an incredible story. I mean, of resilience and, you know, how sometimes necessity can really drive creativity. Exactly. And that's amazing. So you've been mentioning fonio as a type of millet. I'm wondering if you can expand on that. Like, what is the difference in flavor profile or the qualities of the grain?
It's one is the size. Fonio is tiny. It's this, like the size of sand, but it's also millet. And it's gluten-free. Fonio is gluten-free. And also the duration you can have it. So if you sow it, you can harvest within 8 to 12 weeks. So it grows way faster. And then also it thrives in drought areas. Actually, you don't need much water to grow it. And you don't need to plow the land too much. And when it comes to taste, it's almost like couscous, but not really. It's a bit earthy. It's an earthy flavor. And it's very special, honestly. I call it the iconic grain. It's very special.
That's great. So for all the listeners out there, can you tell us where can we go to learn more about this exciting initiative and also on social media and any websites that we should know about?
Yes, absolutely. You can follow us on our website, which is www.fulanikitchenfoundation.com. Or you can follow me on Instagram, chef_Binta. Or you can follow Fulani Kitchen Foundation on Instagram. And you can follow FAO also, because there's so many chefs tagging FAO. Just go on FAO's tag. You find amazing recipes online. Or just put hashtag International Year of Millet 2023. Lots of recipes will come up. Let's keep this challenge going.
Thank you for listening to Treaty Talks, a podcast by the International Treaty on Plant Genetic Resources for Food and Agriculture. For more interviews and information, visit www.fao.org/plant-treaty. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. To listen to this and other episodes of the Foodie Pharmacology podcast, head over to foodiepharmacology.com. You'll find links to everything there, including some fun merch. We've also got links to our Teach Ethnobotany YouTube channel, where you can find full video versions of the show. Thanks so much to our producers, to Rob Cohen and Christine Roth of Co-Conspiracy Entertainment, for putting on a great show for you each and every week. And thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. Stay healthy out there, and I'll see you next time.